Welcome to the Healing Bloom, a safe place to grieve. Our goal is to create an atmosphere around the topic of grief that is real, exploratory, and inviting. Inviting because we want to normalize conversations around death, dying, grief, and bereavement that are relatable to everyday experiences. Join me today in this deep conversation.
Welcome back to another episode of Healing Bloom, a safe space to grieve. Today we have a speaker that is going to be talking about a very important topic. I think all the topics that we talk about are very important, but certainly this one is one that I think that can be quite sensitive in nature. So I'll just kind of put that out there first. And so you may want to, this may be an episode that you may need to tap in and tap out, and that's okay. But I want to introduce our speaker and then offer just a little bit of information about what we'll be talking about today. So our speaker is the wonderful Tawana Andit. And I went on to her website, which she's going to tell us about later, so that I could get all of her titles because she does all the things. And she is an alchemist, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, an intuitive
Yes.
healer, a psychic, a motivation, magical, and metaphysical practitioner. I love all of that. And she's going to tell us all about that so we can get into that. I'm going to share just a little bit about Tawana, and she will share more with us as we get into the interview. But our topic today will just kind of be, well, her bio will be a segue into the topic. So I'm going to start here in 2020. So she may go back a little bit, but in 2020, she writes, "I encountered yet another formidable adversary, a covert, malevolent fourth grade teacher who relentlessly sought to undermine my spirit. His relentless attacks pushed me to despair, culminating in a desperate attempt to end my own life. However, amidst the darkness, a glimmer of hope emerged through the spiritual connection with my mother, who imparted her psychic gifts unto me. Despite enduring profound loss and heartache, including the estrangement from my children, I've emerged with newfound strength and purpose, empowered by the support of my ancestral lineage, spanning five generations. She's embarked on a mission to inspire others to shed the mask of societal expectations and embrace their true selves." I'm so excited to have Ms. Tawana Evett with us today. And our topic is about suicide. So I'm going to share some statistics and then I'm just going to let Ms. Tawana take it away. But I want to share this first so that we can just have a foundation of just how serious this is. Suicide is the 11th leading cause of death in the United States in 2022. 49,000, 50,000 really, we round this up, Americans died from suicide. That same year, there was an estimated 1.6 million suicide attempts. Some additional facts is the age-adjusted suicide rate in that same year was 14.2 per 100,000 individuals. Men died by suicide 3.85 times more than women. White males accounted for 68 or 70% of suicide deaths. Firearms accounted for 55% of all suicide deaths. And 94% of adults surveyed in the U.S. think suicide can be prevented. And I would say, by the presence of Tawana Evett today, that that fact is true.
It
And
is.
so I just want to open this up for you to share just a little bit about your own personal experience with that and just how those statistics are hitting you. Because for me, it's like one punch in the gut after another.
It is. It
So.
is. And I was one of those 1.6 million who was not successful, thankfully,
Amen. Yeah.
at attempting suicide in the year of 2022. In March of 2022, I received a phone call from my sister. They weren't married, but they might as well have been husband and wife. They had been together for 25 years, had passed suddenly of a heart attack in her house. Healthiest man alive, healthiest man we knew. I flew from Atlanta up to DC, of course, to be by her side through the burial. And my sister's a very type A Scorpio, kind of always has it together. And to see her kind of fall apart, I knew that I had to stand tall and strong and that I had to hold my grief over losing my brother-in-law, you know, in, because I needed to be strong for her. And so I never received the chance to grieve. And when I was going back on my flight, I had the worst feeling in the pit of my stomach, like everything in my body was saying, just go home. I had my own place. Just go home. And my best friend messaged me right as the plane was getting ready to take off. And I was telling her, you know, we got to turn the phones off now. She said, why don't you just go to your house? And I said, because I can't take the arguments. I can't do it tonight. So he picked me up and his son was in the car. And, you know, I got in the car trying to be excited, you know, hey, I forgot how great DC is educationally. You know, when I lived there, I never had the opportunity to visit the sites. I was working for White House appointees. I didn't want to see the sites back then. I had to drive to them every day. And the car got cold. And I knew I said something wrong. And I'm like, what possibly could you have said wrong? So we get to the house, put my suitcase in the bedroom. I go to hug him. He pushes me away. And I'm like, okay, I'm in for a long night. So I tried to cry in the shower and come out because I know what's coming. And something told me to put my phone in my robe pocket and hit record, because by now I needed to know I wasn't losing my mind. I needed to know that it wasn't me. And I now know that something was my mother's presence. And I go in the living room and he goes, I'm not going anywhere where you traipsed around town with some other man. And I'm like, huh? What? And I said, first of all, I've never traipsed around anywhere with anyone. And I was married to that man and have two children, and your child's mother traipses in this house now, so like where are we going with this? And you know, he said, you're supposed to reassure me. And I'm thinking to myself, you are a grown man, why do you need all this reassurance? And he's yelling and screaming for hours, and he would take me, I have epilepsy, he would take me to the brink of a seizure and then tell me to go take my medicine. So at one point during the argument, I just went numb. I couldn't hear anything anymore. I couldn't see anything anymore. And I just got up and went and got in the bed. But I took the robe out of my phone out of my robe pocket and slid it under the pillow, still recording. He follows me in the bedroom. I will not respond to him. Finally, everybody falls asleep in the house. The next morning, I'm like, oh God, I'm still here. Like this wasn't just a nightmare. I go and make myself some coffee and I come back in the bedroom because I don't want to. I want to cry. I want to let these feelings out. I lost my brother-in-law and I had to watch my sister be a puddle of jello. He comes in the room and he starts screaming and acting crazy. And I got that numb feeling. And I remember, just like a zombie, walking over to the dresser. I had just filled my sleeping pills prescription and I took every one of them. And then I followed it with coffee and vinegar so that they would all melt quickly. I put on my favorite sweatshirt that my kids gave me. It had butterflies on it. And I went and left the house and laid in the woods and went to sleep. His response was, oh, great. Now I have to go to the drugstore and get you Ipecac. I left the house. By the time he had come back, I was asleep. I don't know how I got to the hospital because he's a liar, so I can't believe him. I just know I didn't get an ambulance bill. So, you know, I don't know how they saved my life, because I know it wasn't charcoal and I know it couldn't have been my stomach pump because I would have had the sore nose and the sore throat. I have no idea what they did. The records are not clear. At that point, I just accepted that my ancestors didn't want me to know. I'm fine with that. Of course, I have to go through mental health therapy. IOP or whatever.
IOP.
Intensive outpatient. After 8 days on the unit, my days on the unit were extended because he would call every day screaming at me, even on the unit. And you know, those phone calls are recorded. And, you know, they would see me breaking down and you could see the nurses writing the little notes. And instead of getting out on a Thursday, I didn't get out till Monday. And I had IOP every day and still he's acting a fool, just complete fool. But he makes me think we can work this out. So when my kids go back to their house one day, he comes over. And I think here we are making up, you know, this is a new start for us. No, he was chill that night. But when he went back home, he went right back to his normal self. And so my sister called me and she says, I think we need each other. Why don't you move back? And I'm like, you know what? Kids are grown. They're on their own. They're doing well. Why not? And I knew I had to get away from him. I knew it was either I get away from him or my life really would have ended the next time I would have done it right.
Yeah.
And so I moved up here. I started trying alternate healing modalities like RTT hypnotherapy, different types of meditations, the dark night of the soul meditations and things like that. And I found them to be very, very helpful. When I moved into my own place after I knew my sister was okay, my mother's voice became undeniably loud. I couldn't sleep. She just had me scripting. Like, you know, where you're writing from your subconscious.
Right.
Not even, you're closing your eyes and you're just writing. And I've got journals and journals and journals where I sat outside on the balcony all night, just writing. And to go back a little bit, I kept telling my daughter I went somewhere. And she's like, what are you talking about, Mom? And I'm like, I went somewhere and I don't know where I went and I don't know what happened. The only thing I can tell you for sure is your Nana was there. But I went somewhere. It was my mom had put blinders on me. You know what I mean? The ancestors put blinders on me. So when I moved into my apartment, the blinders were taken off and she allowed me to have the memory of where I went. And where I went was, I explained to people, if you've ever seen Black Panther and you see where he goes to the ancestral plane, that's where I was. That's where I was. And my stepdad was there. And I remember when my stepdad was in my life, I was a daddy's girl. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's looking down and he's like shaking his head because he never in life told me no. So why in the afterlife would he want to tell me no?
Right.
And my mother goes, you have to go back. And I'm like, Mom, please. I'm worthless. I'm nobody. You know, nobody loves me. Nobody needs me. I even went as far as to beg her and tell her I had to be a child of Satan because nobody, I was unlovable. And she says, no, you have to go back. People need you. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, the girls are adults. And she's like, I'm not talking about the girls. People need you and your purpose begins now. And that's when I woke up in the hospital is when she pushed me back.
Wow.
And so she had me doing the scripting here. And, you know, I knew her energy was here. I could finally see her visibly. I knew my stepdad's energy was here. I could finally see him visibly. And as I learned each new ancestor's energy, they would then show themselves to me in the physical. So I see them like we're sitting here talking now. I see them in their human form now. But in the beginning, they wanted me to be able to recognize their different energies. It was very important. It's been quite a journey, but if I had to do it all over again, I would.
That's interesting.
Just to be able to talk to the people that I talk to every day. I do TikTok lives at night because I'm a psychic. I can't sleep. And the respect, the love, people saying, oh my God, you saved my life. There's one young lady who's in my mentorship program. I saved her from harming her husband yesterday.
Wow.
I was on another podcast and I got an email from a random man and he said, I had the pills in my hand. And I saw you talking on Jeff Mara's podcast and I'm going to stay because you stayed. And there is no greater feeling in this world than to know that someone felt as desperate and worthless as you did at some point and your story saved them.
Absolutely.
No greater feeling in this. No job I work for White House appointees. No job I've ever held. No title I've ever had beats the fulfillment and the joy that I feel every day now, looking forward to serving people. Mm-hmm. You know, and people love my TikTok lives because I tell them it's not just about the psychic readings. That's a side. I said, you guys just feed my Lay's potato chip addiction with that, you know, but it's about me being that intuitive healer. It's about me paying attention to what you're not typing and being able to tell you're really hurting and getting you to take a chance to say yes to your healing. I've built this magical business. And if you asked me how I did it, I wouldn't even be able to tell you the steps that I took to do it, because I just spent days at this desk just belting things out. And I am now, my spiritual coach told me to stop just calling myself a mentor. She said, you are a coach. And I said, but I'm not certified. She said, you don't need to be certified to be a coach. So I have a coaching program now that I offer for people, especially those who suffered from any type of SA or domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. I have resources that I upload on my website for free. I don't collect email addresses. The only thing Squarespace tells me is how many people download it. Mm-hmm. About narcissism and about affirmations and learning to love yourself. I've got 4 people in the mentorship/coaching program right now. 2 women are kicking a star and taking names. Mm-hmm. One of which is a nurse. She works 12 hours a day. She's finishing her RN certification. She has a family. And every day she's accountable to me.
Wow.
She is hungry for that healing. She said something has to change. The side messages that I get, you know, the love that I always wanted and thought could only come from a relationship with a man, I have more than that now. Mm-hmm. My heart is full every day that I wake up, every single day. And I haven't been in a relationship in 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. So, I've been single and celibate the whole time.
So this relationship that was somewhat the catalyst.
It was
this,
the catalyst.
That's the last relationship that you've been in.
Yes, it is. I have remained 100% single and celibate since that day.
Wow.
I needed to take a chance on myself. I needed to learn more about myself. I needed to stop jumping. You know, I hadn't been with a lot of people, but I would still be in long-term relationships that were failures. Mm-hmm. And I needed to show my kids something different.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So my kids and I were in full separation. Now I call it semi separation because a week ago I'm sitting here, sorry. And I hear my daughter's ringtone, and you know, I would always freeze when I hear their ringtones because I never know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And then I hear my sister's ringtone, and now I'm afraid to pick up the phone because the two of them. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's back to back. Mm-hmm. And it was a text. We're here at Auntie Stacy's house and want to see you. Mm-hmm. The grandbabies are here.
Amazing. You have grandchildren too. Wonderful.
I spent the entire day playing hide and seek. I was hiding in sheds behind air conditioners. Oh, because I told my grandchildren, I said, nobody knows Auntie Stacy sells better than me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would cheat. One would hide with me while the other one was looking. And we ate pizza together and we played Go Fish and Uno. And I just got to hug their little bodies. I hadn't seen them in 5 years. And got to hear about school. And I just cherished, I just basked in every single second that I was there with them. And their mom came out and talked to me a little bit, you know, told me about some changes in her life. And I'm proud of all of my daughters. All of my daughters are remarkable, brave, beautiful women. Uh-huh. And very successful. I am so proud of them. And I'm proud for them even being brave enough to stand up to me. And they had a right to.
Right, right.
They had a right to say, your trauma, we're done with it. Mm-hmm. We can't take it anymore, mm-hmm. you know? And so One, the child who used to be closest to me, my daughter who used to be closest, she seemed the most apprehensive. So she was more observing of my behaviors.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because there's a lot to prove. There's a lot of work to be done. And I respect that. And it will be done in their time if it's ever done. And that's their choice. And people used to get up, you know, the family would get upset when I said that. But I told them, no, they are grown women. They have a right to decide who they do and don't want in their life.
Yeah, they get to choose.
Exactly. And just because there's a title of mother, which I've removed at this point, you know, it's when I saw them last week, it was, hey, is it okay if I hug the grandkids? Mm-hmm. Hey, is it all right if I give them, you know, chips, or can I take a photo with them? May I take a photo with you? And that's something I think even that may have thrown my kids off. Like, whoa, what's this lady talking about now? Because I always assumed because I was their mother, I had these certain rights. But that comes from my upbringing, you know? And so, no, I want to show them something different. And I want them to know that I deserved it. I deserved it, period. Mm-hmm. I deserve the separation. They were tired. They couldn't take any more. They think that my suicide attempt was over a man. It was just the straw that broke the camel's back. It was over my hatred of myself. He just was the catalyst for it.
He helped to usher
exactly
that in, even more, like almost putting like a spotlight on it.
Yes. And so whatever they choose is what will happen. And I'm okay with that. I know I get emotional when I talked about, you know, seeing my grandbabies, but it's just, I accept what is. I no longer try to control. And I even had to tell some of my family, you all's definition of love is control. And that's not love. Love is not control. Love is accepting someone as they are for who they are and just because they exist. I controlled my kids, and that was wrong, you know?
I love that. Yeah.
Do you?
Because it's such, when I think about like the what you just shared in your story, there is a parallel there in terms of the control that you were feeling in that relationship and how restrictive it was. Like when you said he would push me to the brink of having this episode, like there's control, you know, there's and I mean, talk about laser focused, you know, control. There's such control there. So it speaks to your, you know what that feels like.
I do.
You know what that feels like. So that makes sense when you're saying like, almost kind of like I can give myself permission to step back, which there's a lot of vulnerability in that, but just also just speaks to the lesson learned.
Yes.
In that experience, like you can, you felt that, so you know how it feels for your children. Different experience, but it's the same, like control was control.
Same principle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love my children. I would do anything for them. But like I said, I deserve what they gave me, and I'm okay with that. But in the meantime, there was a young lady who challenged me in a TikTok live the other night. And she's like, how can we trust you if your own children don't trust you? And I said, because I was born alone with a purpose.
Wow.
Way before they got here. I said, and you can trust me despite my own children not trusting me, because I sit on here and I share about my failures when raised my children. I share that I failed my kids. I share that I was wrong. I said, when people take accountability, that's how you know you can trust them. And if they choose to never speak to me again, that's well within their right.
That's spot on. That is spot on. I want to go back for a moment. There are one question in particular, just because I want the audience to know what this is. You mentioned hypnotherapy, but you mentioned, I guess, a specific type of hypnotherapy, RTT. What does RTT stand for?
Rapid Transformational Therapy.
Transformational.
And they take you back through the subconscious, basically as far as you want to go. And I went back literally to being in the womb.
To the womb.
So, yes, they take you back and you learn how to heal that part of you because, you know, we fragment when we have trauma. We create different identities and things like that. And I was traumatized beyond belief at 15 by my father. I was expecting his child. And so that's where the lack of self-love came from. That's where my hatred of self came from. And that's my natural father, my actual father. And so I never learned how to heal that because how at 15, how do you learn how to
How?
heal that?
Right.
So that's why I say I should have healed before I had my children, because you know, that control, it was my way of hoping that nothing ever happened to them. You know what I mean?
Trying to
And
protect them.
yes,
Trying to protect them.
but in the end, it's not what works. It's not what works, and I recognize that. And so it spilled over into their childhood, and I completely recognize that. But RTT hypnotherapy was the first thing that made me start to feel good again. It was like, oh, this is yummy. Like, this is, you know, I like this feeling. This,
Healing
I
feels
can, exactly. And
good.
it was like, because at times I would cover my bathroom mirror sometimes because I hated myself so much, I didn't want to see myself. And then it was like, okay, I can look at myself in the mirror now. I might not love what I see, but I can look at myself in the mirror. And it gave me steps, you know, to love those different parts of me that had to exist to live through that trauma. Because to not many people would have survived that trauma. So, you know, I learned, I call her little Tawana, my inner child. And, you know, I learned how to nurture my inner child and how to thank her for being so brave and so protective of me that we kept going, you know? And I have little Tawana days. Look, if she's having a bad day and I'm having a bad day, I have a Harry Potter onesie and a Disney onesie hanging on the back of the bathroom door, and we have puzzles and crayons, and I nurture that part of myself. I went and found some swings the other day. I was just swinging like a kid. You know, I nurture that part of myself because a lot of us who are traumatized, we forget that there was a little child there once who existed, who had to stop being a child and had to start being a grown-up.
Yeah, you're right. We got to reach back sometimes and take care of that part. So I like that. Another thing that you there's a couple of things. I'm not gonna go over all of them, but this is just what's coming up for me is that numbness piece. Like I'm curious about as you were sharing your story in that moment, you felt this numbness. Was that a new feeling for you, something you had felt before?
I had never dissociated
You
that
had
bad.
never did.
I know what dissociation is, and I've had to do it. And even, you know, I had to do that through the trauma with my father, but I had never dissociated that bad. It was almost like I was watching my just a shell from a mirror. I had just completely disconnected.
And just for the audience sake, when she's talking about like dissociate or dissociation, it doesn't mean that you have a diagnosis of dissociative disorder, but it's something that we all do. If you can imagine that sometimes you're say you get in the car. I know, look, at my age, or sometimes I'll get in the car and be like, where am I going? Like you lose track of time, or you forget things, or you're not able to track things like in a conversation, and you're like, what are we talking about now? Those are like very simple things. We all do that. So, we don't have to make that be like a big thing. We all do that. But in what you're talking about, a lot of times clients will say, like, I saw myself. Like they can almost like they're hovering above
100%.
and they're looking down and they can see the activity happening. And it is a almost because I believe, right, in my work and doing EMDR that the body has everything it needs to heal
Oh,
itself.
yes.
And so part of that is about self-preservation. Sometimes our bodies can't feel all the fields at one time, because it would take us out.
Exactly.
It would just take us
Exactly.
out. And so it's almost kind of like a compartmentalization in a way. You know, it's that I can deal with this piece right now, but I can't deal with the whole bag, because if I deal with the whole bag, I'm not going to survive. So it's the body's way of helping us to survive through very difficult moments, through disruption. So that's what we're talking about here. So that numbness was, to that degree, was not something that you had experienced before.
No, and not even with my dad. No.
Interesting.
Not even, I mean, I had dissociated with my father, but not to that degree, not to the point to where I felt like a zombie, just walking like a shell. I literally felt like I was a shell and my spirit was not in my body anymore, but I was watching this shell just walk away. It was the weirdest feeling.
Yeah. So the interesting piece to that, too, for this piece of the conversation is our body's ability to tolerate stress. Right. We think this is the analogy that I like to use all the time, because I love Sphinx and QT, and especially QT with a little frozen drinks. Right. So when I go, I'm getting the big one. I don't want no little one. I want the big one. But either way. So I say you go in there and you're like, okay, well, I have a 12 or 16 ounce cup, right? But I want 32 ounces of this nice cool drink. So I put this 16 ounce cup up there and it's going, you know, it's filling up, it's 4 ounces, it's 8 ounces, it's 12 ounces. And I see it reaching the top. So it gets to 16 and I'm thinking, but no, I want more though. I want double this amount, but I don't have a big enough cup.
No.
So let's say our body is the cup.
Yes. I love that analogy.
You got 16 ounces. And that's all you got. And that's all you're ever going to get. It's 16 ounces. But here we go about life trying to put 32 ounces of not only the good stuff, the bad stuff, the indifferent stuff. We're trying to fill up even more, but there's no room. So we all have this job of clearing that out. Like, I got to drink this up.
Right.
Drink it up. I got to clear it out. Because there's some good things in there, but there's also some things that I don't need.
Right.
Because it's never going to get cleared up properly, or it's stored in a way that it's just going to take up way more room than I need it to. So our job is, we need to clear that up so that we can make room for more, because this is the only vessel that we have.
Exactly.
Right. That's all we get.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones. So I wonder, in your work, you've kind of given a couple of examples of exchanges that you've had with people that you work with. But in this moment, if there's someone out there that's hearing this and they're in a similar space for whatever that reason, feeling that numbness or any of the other symptoms that come along with suicide, and I'm going to share some of those. If someone is talking about wanting to die, having a great sense of like guilt or shame, feeling like they are a burden to others, feeling hopeless, feeling trapped, having this sensation of numbness, like they can't feel, isolating, some changes in behavior, like we talk about people giving away things, then withdrawing from friends. So there's a lot of different things that can kind of cue us into something is not right. So there's someone out there that's hearing this and they're experiencing some of this. What do you say to that individual?
I tell them that they have a purpose and they are worth something, and that there are a lot of us out here who do pro bono work. There are a lot of us out here who will waive the fees. There are a lot of us out here who just want to sit and listen to your story and let you know how valuable and loved that you are. Like I tell my TikTok audience, I love you guys just because you exist. You don't have to do anything for me. It's not about, like I said, the the $15 readings, that's my Lay's habit, you know. But my real purpose is to be there all night, because nighttime is when a lot of this stuff happens.
That's true.
And
good
it's
point.
To be a sounding board. It's to be an inspiration. I share my entire story with full transparency every night. And every night it touches someone. So find me, find, you know, another coach, something. And there is help out here, and not the type that's going to put you in the I love me jacket, you know, the type who really have been there. Those of us who have felt that loneliness and that desperation, we're out here. So seek us out, please. By all means, you're worth something, and you're so needed in this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I love about your work and how you share is your openness and the vulnerability in sharing your story. There's so much healing in just telling the story, right? Some people have not had an opportunity to share their story without there being some
judgment
attached to it, right? What you should have done, or you didn't tell nobody, or, you know, if it were me, I would have done this. And all of those things may be true or not in some circumstances, whatever that is, but to just create space for people.
Exactly.
And be a vessel for people when they can't be one for themselves. We discount that so much. There's so much power
we
in
do.
That. So thank you for what you do. So before we get to your services, I'm going to ask you one last question, and then
no worries.
All about what you got going on is the tagline for this podcast is a safe space to grieve. So I want to hear from you. Why is it important to either create or have a safe space to grieve?
I tell even my TikTok followers that grief is important, and allowing yourself to grieve is important, because it eliminates the shoulda, woulda, couldas. It eliminates the, you know, I should have done this, I should have done that, I could have been this. I used to say a lot of times, because I had my daughter in high school, I had a modeling contract and a full college scholarship. I could have been a college graduate and been a model. And I tell people, no, you need to grieve the life you thought you were supposed to have, in order for you to receive the life that the divine has for you. And I even go as far, and I'll tell them, this is what we thought life was supposed to look like, and we're gripping it with everything in us. Can we receive from the divine? Can we receive a new life that's even better? No.
When you're holding on so tight.
Exactly.
For what you thought.
Exactly. So grief is so important. And allow yourself to cry. Allow yourself to write. Writing is just journaling is one of the best tools that are so underused. Like, yes, journal about it. Write about it. Voice notes. Take time out for yourself. Don't hop into another relationship. Get to know who you are and why you operate the way you do. Cry again. Go to the dollar store, get some dishes, smash them in a random parking lot if you have to. These are all healthy ways to get that energy out of you. Because until that energy comes up and out, it's just going to get stuffed, and then you're going to explode again later.
16 ounces.
There we go. There we go.
I love you say, when you said cry again, do it again. That's it. That's what I'm talking about. I love it. So we want to hear about, how can we find you? Someone wants to work with you. You're their person. How do they get in touch with you, get connected?
I am Black Butterfly Goddess on everything. I made it easy. Social media, Black Butterfly Goddess. Twitter, Black Butterfly Goddess. YouTube, my website, info@blackbutterflygoddess is the one of the email addresses that I made easy for you guys. Facebook, Black Butterfly Goddess, Instagram, BBG. So I made it easy. I and it's funny, because I only learned yesterday what the Black Butterfly stood for, aside from transformation.
And what does it stand for?
Ancestral connection.
Wow.
And I had No idea until I read an article yesterday. And then, of course, I'm like screen recording me reading the article and sent it to my mentor slash coach slash, you know, soul sister. I'm like, oh my God, like, look at this.
It aligns. But
it aligns with who I am and how I got here and the life that I have now, being the bridge between the material and the spiritual realms. So, yeah.
Love it. Okay. Black Butterfly Goddess. So, first of all, easy to remember. But yes, for someone out there that's like, oh, where do I find her again? All of this will be on the post, so you will be able to find it. It will also be in the copy with the recording, so you will be able to find her information there. In fact, it will be a hyperlink, so you'll just be able to click on that, and it'll take you right to her, the Black Butterfly Goddess. We got that. All right, so any final words that you have for the audience?
Be yourself. Mm-hmm. Learn who you are and be your true, authentic self. And once you can do that, you can shine from within and no one can dim that shine.
Come on, love it. Thank you so much for being here with us on this episode of Healing Bloom, A Safe Space to Grieve, with our guest, Tawana Evett, Black Butterfly Goddess. Until next time, you can find us on Spotify and any other major podcast platforms to catch previous episodes. But we thank you for listening again to this wonderful episode.